Hello, welcome to the Future of Pickleball. I'm Paul Olson, your host. This is the show where we bring you the leaders, the movers, the shakers, the people that are making a difference in pickleball. Show, I want to talk to you about Selkirk's amazing line of pickleball nets. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, Selkirk has the perfect net for you. When you choose a Selkirk net, you're not just choosing any net. You're opting for the official net of the PPA Tour, where excellence meets professional play. With Selkirk's line of nets, you can play pickleball anywhere. Selkirk's range of nets cater to every player's needs, offering budget-friendly choices for casual enthusiasts and premium options for those who want a more competitive edge, ensuring quality play for all levels. I've got a Selkirk net myself, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. It's all about playing on your terms wherever you want. So if you love pickleball as much as I do, check out Selkirk's pickleball nets. Get the freedom to play anywhere and elevate your game with the net trusted by the pros. Selkirk's got you covered. If you're interested in getting a net of your own, go to selkirk.com/collections/nets. You can also find this link in the description of this show. All right, let's jump into it. Today, I've got a marvelous guest that's doing something amazing for pickleball. Roger Belair, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, it's great to be here today. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Well, I have too. I'm going to have to give a little bit of a preview on who you are and what you're doing, because you're not the most common guy in the sport. Yeah. Roger has actually begun and developed prison pickleball programs in the jails and prisons around the United States. He has an amazing story to tell how pickleball is figuring into these environments. Roger, could we start? Give me an idea as to how you got into pickleball to begin with.
Well, I've been playing for about 14 years now. And prior to that, I was a professional speaker and written a couple books. And like almost everybody else, once I started pickleball, I just loved it. And after 6 months or a year, I said, hey, I can teach this. So that's what's happened, is I started teaching at the local rec center, and it's just kind of gone from there.
And then, now, this business of you creating a program in the jails and prison systems, how did that come about? Where did that come from?
Oh, boy, you know, you never know where that's going to take you. My wife and I normally watch 60 Minutes every Sunday night. It's a habit we've had for years. And in 2017, we're watching a segment on Sheriff Tom Dart, who does his best to run Cook County Jail in Chicago. And as you can imagine, what a challenge that is.
Sure.
80,000 people go through there every year, also mostly men, of course. And I'm watching this segment, and I'm saying to my wife, I said, these guys are sitting around. They're playing cards or watching TV. They should be playing pickleball. They not only get exercise, but learn life skills, like teamwork, learn from mistakes, that type of thing. Well, a moment or two later, I said, I'm going to write Sheriff Dart a letter telling what I think, and I'll go back there on my own dime, bring all the equipment, and I'll teach those guys. Well, I don't know, Paul, if you're married, but I got one of those lumps I won't rather.
Yeah.
Really? You think you're getting an answer from that? Well, I did. Write that letter, and as you know, the dying disposition gets a lot of letters from coops. If you have never heard of pickleball,
yeah.
And the way I understand it is, over the dinner table, he has two or three kids. He happens to say, "Geez, I got this letter from the spy in Seattle, something about balls and pickle." I don't know if he's for real or not. 8-year-old daughter puts her hands on her hips and said, "Dad, I'll tell you about pickleball."
Oh, I'll be.
And if it hadn't been for that daughter, we wouldn't be talking here today. Because, you know, he walked into it a little bit, learned about the sport. This is 2017 before it really took off. And that's it. I knew I was on a plane back to Chicago.
Now, you're on a plane back to Chicago. Did he give you any idea of what the situation was going to be in? I mean, here you're going into, I'm a native Chicagoan. I know what Cook County Jail is. That's not a party place. How did that come about? What did happen then?
Oh, Well, I'm about halfway in the flight, and I'm saying, what am I doing? You know, that's a real head slap. I mean, I'm almost 70 years old, and I'm going to a place that, you know, Cook County has almost 1,000 homicides each year. I did a little research. I drove up in front. I look around. The place is huge, Paul. I mean, it's like 70 football fields. I mean, that's how big this is.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I had to go through clearance, and I found myself in a room with about 25 men. And I started to give a little background about the sport. I was Joel Pritchard and Barney and Bill Bell started it, and this cross between, that type of thing. Oh, man. Arms are crossed, eyes were rolling, guys ended up and getting it, out of the, from the water fountain. I mean, I didn't connect at all. I mean, it had absolutely no interest in anything I had to say. And I did, at that point, I didn't even know if I'd be coming back to Seattle. But not knowing really what to do, I said, Roger, this isn't working. Let's just go out to the course. And we had three courts set up in the gymnasium. We put down Peter's tape. And I would say within 15 minutes, they turned into like third graders out of the playground.
How fun.
I mean, of course, we're all bangers. I mean, that's all they knew. Well, they didn't even know that. But they're just laughing. They're giggling. And you can imagine how much stress there is. Because the guys I was dealing with, most of them had been charged with murder. Now, guilty or innocent, you can imagine the stress of being in that situation. They haven't gotten in front of the judge yet. And everybody in their surroundings is kind of in the same place. So in that one day, I went from OG. You know what OG is?
Old guy.
Not original gangster, but old guy. I went from OG to either bro or dude at the end of the day.
Yeah.
They absolutely loved it.
How fun. You know, so as you did this and you got into this, you say the prisoners, they adopted it, but you've now taken this thing to a fairly extensive level. I'd like you to talk about how this startup in Cook County Jail evolved into some of the other programs you've got around the world, around the nation.
Well, we both know the power of publicity. I've been at Cook County Jail three times. The last time when I walked into that jail, I mean, I was treated like a rock star. You know, high fives, everybody's clapping, that type of thing. And the third time, there was a sports reporter for USA Today. And Scott was there to write an article for a sports pick. And, I thought about, the interview's about, you interviewed me, some inmates, some staff. Called me up a couple of days later and said, I don't know how to tell you this, Roger, but it's not going to be on the sports page. Pow. My heart dropped. I said to myself, why'd they tell the story? I thought it was a good story. I told my nosy neighbor. I told the guys that it's him. I'm going to have egg on my face. You know, but I disappointed. And then he said, the editors read the story. And you're going to put it on the front page of USA Today.
Oh, wow.
The main column, back when that's what the USA Today had. Well, that type of publicity really impacts things. And next thing I ended up with in a place maybe you've heard of, it's called Rikers Island in New York.
Sure.
Did he? Boy, do they have challenges back there. There's so many challenges the city council even is voted to close them down in 2000. I was there a week. It went very well. The deputy commissioner, Paul, after I left, he ordered 20 sets of pickleball messing equipment.
Amazing.
Came out to California. I went to Corcoran. That's where Charles Manson fits in black. You know, once again, just everybody loved it. And here's what happens. Disciplinary problems are down. The audience want to play so much that they behave themselves because if they get into trouble, they can't play pickleball.
Is that right? So this is literally helping the prison guards, the wardens, the admin? Is pickleball positive there?
On so many different levels. I encourage your listeners to pull up the USA Today article. They can find it online by Googling my name in USA Today. And in that article, it talks... You know, Ken Edmonton, who's in charge of athletics, he says, this player problems down. But more important than that, you can imagine the gang violence in a place like Chicago.
Sure.
You know, most of the homicide, almost 1,000 a year, are gang on gang related. So there's a picture of me sitting on the bench with a gentleman who's been charged with attempted murder. And as that picture's taken, he's saying to me, "Roger, look out there on the courts." Well, I see some guys, you know, bangers trying to hit the ball over the net. "You don't understand. You just don't understand it. You got opposite gang members out there playing with and against each other." Prior to pickleball, they would not talk to each other.
Very impressive.
Now, how impactful is that? But you can use a carrot rather than a stick to enhance relationships like that and get people playing together, laughing together, just like you and I when we go off the court.
So now, here we are, you're talking 2017, we're in 2024. How many prisons do you have that you're working with, and do you have any that you're yet to bring on board?
Well, here's what happened on that. You know, I went to California, that was great, where Charles Manson was. I came back to Washington State, opened up 3 or 4 prisons, and then what happened was COVID.
Oh.
Well, oh my gosh. You can just imagine, you know, try to make yourself a baseball warden. You cannot practice social distancing. Your
right.
Staff doesn't want to work in that type of environment, so you're always your staff. I mean, you as a warden, you want to, number one, keep people safe. And the way you do that in that type of environment is just pull everything down. So I started giving a few speeches, and those were well-received. And things really broke loose early 2000. First thing that happened is I got contacted by the Florida Department of Corrections. Now, Florida has the third largest prison population in the country. California is number 2 and Texas is number 1. And they said, we know what you do. Can you come down here? I went down to Florida, visited a number of sites over a week. After I got through, the head of education wrote me and said, "This was a massive success. The lasting impact that you've had on the Department of Corrections is immeasurable." Shortly thereafter, I'm contacted by email by the warden at San Quentin. San Quentin has more people on death row than any other site in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Will you come up here and teach pickleball?" Well, then Folsom found out about it, and then a couple other prisons found out about it in California. So I traveled to 4 different sites. Everywhere I went, it's just so well received. And what's happened in both those sites, which bring you up to date, is Florida just got back to me and says, "Hey, this is going great. Discipline problems are down. Communication is up. You know, would you come back and open 10 more sites?"
Wow.
Now, in California, I mentioned San Quentin, the warden is so excited about the benefits. He's even building a court outside the yard, outside the walls, so staff can play before and after work. So the headquarters of California is coming to me and saying, "Hey, we want to do more of this. I mean, we see how it's working. It's inexpensive. It doesn't cost that much money. I mean, the equipment is nominal, et cetera." All right. So fortunately, what's happened the last year, people have come to me. Is that I've read about you online. I got a prison in Connecticut. I have no idea where to start. Will you help me? Will you mentor me so that what we can do is bring it in there? And then what I want to do is go in there you once a month. And so we formed a loosely knit group of about 25 to 30 of us. That's exactly what's happening is we meet every couple months by Zoom. I bring them up to date as far as what's happening. I give them tips as far as here's what to expect. Here's how to make the thing work. And like in Washington State, we have some people go back to a woman's prison every 2 weeks or every month. So that's really where we are right now.
And now, so as you're doing that, here we are talking about this, when you had reached out to me, telling me about this program and thinking that maybe there's some people who are in our listenership that might very well be willing to help you or become involved, what would they be doing? So if somebody were to say, "We want you to go into the prisons," what will that be like? Or what might somebody do who wanted to help?
Well, that's great. And of course, I'd love to have those people contact me and I pretty much say, "Well, here's what the environment's like." All right. It's really important when you approach your prisons, you know, they, They're so short-staffed right now. You know, staffing is down 20-30% that you can imagine how the staff is pulled one way or another.
Sure.
So rather than call the operator and say, well, here I am, I want to come on to, you know, get in the prison, I encourage them to write a letter to the warden and put in some testimonials that I would share with them, like from San Quentin and Florida and certainly others, as well as a few articles, because the warden might not be familiar with pickleball on the inside. And then offer to say, I'm not asking for money. I'll come in, I'll donate my time. And if it goes well, then what we'll do is maybe I'll come back on a regular or irregular basis. But it's great if they can do that in a prison in the very close to their local community, because they don't have the travel time.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So this would be a matter of, I mean, if somebody, most of us would know if there was a prison around us or something on that order. The testimonials that you've got and some of these wardens that you're talking about, these programs, they're willing to step up and say, hey, we're a believer. We've got this thing on in our... How cool is that?
Well, you know, the evidence is there, all right? And 95% of all inmates are eventually released back into society. And if we can make them better people on the inside, it just makes it safer for all of us once they get the outside, right? Because today's inmate is going to be tomorrow's neighbor.
Sure.
And that's exactly what's happening. And I've had inmates reach out to me. I mean, I'm just kind of amazed at how this thing has taken off. As pickleball has taken off, and people are aware of it. But it's just doing so much good for our society. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
I'll tell you what, it's so exciting to hear this. I mean, when was the last time anybody heard anything positive about something going on in the prison system? I mean, we just never hear about it. And the idea of having this game that those of us that play it love it and enjoy it, are they everything in the prisons in terms of how the players rotate, how they conduct themselves? Is that all similar to the way we do it out at the parks?
Well, you know, I'm one with a fairly strong personality. You know, I felt like I'm in charge. You're going to appreciate this story because, you know, I break it down. I tell short stories with that have a teaching point. And I thought, believe it or not, I caught about 3,500 people how to play the game. All right. And I basically say there's four rules. All right. You know, I tell them about rule number one, you get the ball underhand when you serve. The two bounce rules, number two. And the kitchen was the number three. And so I do that in order so everybody can understand it. Now, here's one of the differences between me teaching it on the outside and Roger teaching it on the end. The guys love it. Then I tell them the hardest part is learning how to keep score. You got to count to 11, guys. And they're having fun. And so we play a game. All right. And so after that game is over, I say, well, now we got the winners and we had those that came into second place, right? And they're all excited, especially the winners. I say, guess how many rules are there? Well, they look at each other. Some say three, some say four. I said, what's the fourth rule? Well, I don't know. All right. Well, if there's the fourth rule, after the game's over, we have to group up. They freeze. And they look at me. And you can hear a pin drop. And I've had this happen over and over again. My favorite card at teaching pickleball. So then what happens is I go up to the net. I put my paddle up. They come up. We tap paddles. I said, guys, that is the fourth rule. We have a group hug afterwards. That's the group.
Oh, very. How cool is that?
How cool is that? And I'll tell you right now, today, there's hundreds of guys in prison. After the game's over, they say, "Real hug, everybody."
Oh, right I'll
now,
be.
Right yeah. now. All right. Now, I got to, you know, once in a while, Paul will somebody say, "Hey, Roger, is that really one of the rules? Or did you just make that up?" All right. And I say, "It's absolutely one of the rules."
Yeah.
And you will follow it. What are they going to do? Ask the warden. You know, the warden is not going to leave it up.
Yeah, sure, rule. Sure.
All right. But I think, you know, that simple stream forward, our society would be better off if we had a lot more hugs and a lot less violence.
Sure.
Now, I can get guys on the inside. And, you hear stories about their background, it's hard to believe. But if I can give them inspiration to think in terms of that, we just all win.
Sure.
So that's the fourth rule.
In our earlier conversation, one of the things that you had mentioned to me that I want you to just talk about a little bit that really impressed me is you'd said that it was never a strategic plan, but that you had gotten a call from one of the wardens that he said that they were seeing an additional unexpected benefit in the preparation of players, prisoners who were getting ready to be released. The biggest hurdle was getting them work when they get out of prison and getting them into a social environment.
There's so many, I get so much feedback from different people about, how helps with this fire problem, whatever. I got a call from headquarters, a person who worked in headquarters in California. And she said to me, she said, Roger, I think the biggest benefit is once inmates get out. And for a second, I kind of put my hands on my head mentally and say, hey, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Look at how great it is on the inside. And you said the biggest benefit is once they get out. And of course, I didn't say that to her, but I'm thinking about it. And she says, sure as a liar. The recidivism rate in this country is about 70% in 5 or 6 years. And by the way, you compare that to Norway, which is about 20%. All right, so they're doing something right over there that we can learn from. The California especially is trying to duplicate their model. We've done all kinds of research as far as why when guy or woman gets out, when they stay out, all right? And here's what we learned. The first thing they need is support. And normally what you do is you think about that and you think of family support. Well, that's great if they get the support, but frankly, so many of the families are just as messed up as the guy coming out.
Sure.
Number two is they need income, right? They need a jumbo. But they put their background on a resume, and the hard facts are, a year after getting out, half the former inmates are still looking for a job. Can that relate to homelessness? I think a little bit. And the third thing they need is community. Gainesville. That's pickleball. So she's telling me, and he says, once they get out, they can grab a paddle and go to the courts. They can make new friends. They can have a new community. Ask them compared to going back to the environment that they were in.
Sure.
And so she's spot on. I mean, that's just great advice that she gave me. And it's we all know what community is like in pickleball, and how many new friends do we have just of our environment of playing this little game that where the plastic ball goes over the net.
Yeah, very nice. You know, I'll tell you, this really is. I knew this was going to be kind of an inspirational conversation with you. I love the fact that we're seeing all of the things that general society enjoys about pickleball of recreation, activity, health and wellness, and community and relationships is such a huge piece of it. The fact that that's also replicating itself in a prison environment is just amazing. Something that I would really like you to do as we start to kind of wind this down is tell me what you see. My show is really about the future, where it's the sports going. But in your case, where do you see the future of pickleball in the U.S. prison and jail systems?
Oh, I see it all in a matter of time until it's in all the big prisons. And jails is much more transitory. People are really there before they go in front of a judge.
I see. Right? Okay.
And then after that, they either go home, or if they have a short sentence, they'll go back to jail for a couple months or whatever sentence happens to be. If they have a longer sentence, over a year, then they're going to go to a prison. All right?
Okay.
So I very definitely see it in almost all the prisons. It's only going to be a matter of time, all right, before that happens. And many of the jails, some of the smaller jails are so small, they don't have any recreational type facility.
Sure.
Okay.
So then, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I didn't know where you were exactly going with that question. I got to know Barney McCallum quite well. He was alive. He was fascinated by criminal justice. He was intrigued by what I was doing. So once a month or so, I would go down and visit him, and he passed away about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. He was alive, so the three surviving founders.
Right.
But what he said, I hope they don't change the rules. I hope they realize what this sport is, the benefits of it. And then he talked a little bit about tennis. He says, tennis is a wonderful game. But what happened back in the 70s, it was focused more on the elite player. They made the rackets bigger, lighter, stronger, more powerful, and it really hurt the game. And I sure hope they don't allow that to happen at pickleball, a focus on the elite player, because this game is really made for all of us.
You know, very nice, very nice. Now, I want to make a kind of a call out here to our pickleball world and our pickleball community. I'm going to ask Barney to give contact information as to where he can be followed up with. But any of you that think you'd like to do something for society through pickleball, please reach out to Roger. See if you can do something to help. I want to get you all connected with him.
Oh.
Please, where should they get in touch with you?
Best thing to do is through my email, which is Belair, when that's for R-O-N-E-N at Gmail. So it's BELAIRR at Gmail.
Perfect.
And we're going to reach out to me, and I'll get back to every single one of them, of course.
And we'll make sure that goes into the link on this piece. And,
oh, perfect.
You know, before I sign off with you, I want to reach out to everybody. And if you're enjoying this kind of content, hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. You'll get information like this interview that we're doing here every time we come out with a new podcast weekly. I've got Barney on my brain. Roger, this has been so informative. I really appreciate you taking the time with us today. Thank you very much for joining the Future of Pickleball.
Well, thank you. Oh, it's great to be here.